Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 Minute Drill on the program.
That's what's going on in my world, Jed.
Nerd.
Second half of the program begins right now. Around the country, talking to the people, covering the stories where they are happening. They're happening this time in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We go to our man, Brian D., ESPN 94.5, to lead us off. Brian, how are you, buddy?
I'm well. How are you guys doing?
Very good. How are the Packer fans doing now that Aaron Rodgers seems to be back to the full power Aaron Rodgers after that performance? I'm sure they're talking Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, people are excited about the performance the Packers were able to put out there on the field on a short week yesterday afternoon at Lambeau. Rodgers, 25 of 31, 429, 5 touchdowns through the air, 1 on the ground, perfect 158.3 passer rating. And I think the exciting part about yesterday for a lot of Packers fans, guys, was that this is now the third consecutive game where the Packers have been able to get a victory without Devontae Adams, their top wide receiver, in the mix. Yesterday, Rodgers spread it around to a variety of different guys, variety of different pass catchers, some of whom we didn't even know were going to play yesterday because of injuries. So all in all, a really exciting performance. And, you know, I think the big thing that jumped out to me in particular was this looked like the Matt LaFleur offense that we were expecting to see coming into the season. It's the closest that we've seen to it. It's stuff that you guys have seen up close and personal in Kansas City, where receivers are just running wide open down the field. That was what we were pitched when Matt LaFleur was hired, and that's something that we started to see yesterday. A lot of misdirection in the backfield after the snap. Really fun, exciting, cool stuff to watch with a bunch of, I hate to call them no names, but certainly unproven wide receivers. And Rodgers just put up a career day. So, yeah, definitely Packers fans are excited.
No doubt Aaron Rodgers is the most important part, but how exciting is it to see them consistently running the football as well?
Yeah, for sure. It's something that the Packers' offense has lacked in the last 3, 4, 5 years. And to get consistent contributions, not just out of Aaron Jones, who, you know, we thought was going to be the number one coming into the season, but Jamal Williams as well. He's been terrific. I think back to last week's kind of controversial Monday night victory over the Lions. He was kind of the lead guy during that game when Aaron Jones was struggling. Aaron Jones dropped a wide-open touchdown pass and, you know, fumbled a football. So he was having a rough night. They were able to get a good running ground contribution from Jamal Williams as well. So it's not just one back this year. Certainly a positive sign for the Packers on, in that front, in that respect.
How did Wisconsin lose to Illinois?
Great question. I do not know. I cannot figure it out. The only thing that I could put my thumb on is they overlooked them and came out flat. They've got Ohio State in Columbus at the Shoe this weekend. It's an 11 a.m. start in Champaign. You just kind of go down there and think maybe we can out-talent these guys, right? And, you know, we had Mike Golic Jr. from Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio join our show here in Milwaukee a little bit earlier this afternoon. I asked him the same question, Turin, that you just asked me, because I'm still trying to figure out the answer to it, and he didn't have an answer for us. So that's the only thing we can kind of find a common thread through is they must have overlooked Illinois or just thought they could out-talent them, knowing that they had what we thought was going to be a potential top-five matchup against Ohio State looming this weekend. Now not a top-five matchup anymore because they had the big speed bump hit down there in Champaign over the weekend.
They still have the and of course, that loss to Illinois, what it really does is eliminate any breathing room they had with Minnesota and maybe a little bit further down the list, Iowa. When it comes to their side getting into the Big Ten championship game, they're a 14-point dog. What do you think happens in that game?
This weekend, I think, you know, they're in for another tough test, and it's going to be interesting to see how they respond. They've been really good all season long. Jack Cohn has been playing mistake-free football. Jonathan Taylor has been a Heisman Trophy candidate. And the weird part about the loss to Illinois was they had a couple of punches from inside the five-yard line to try and get in and went away from Jonathan Taylor, which was just super bizarre to see. Why would you go away from your Heisman Trophy candidate in a short yardage situation in a close football game on the road? It just didn't make any sense. So I would expect a better performance, especially from the defense, which has kind of been what they hang their hat on down there in Columbus this upcoming weekend. I got to believe that Jimmy Leonard, their defensive coordinator, and that group is going to respond in a big way. But as you kind of alluded to, it's do or die for them. Their college football playoff hopes have likely been dashed already because of this loss to Illinois, and they will certainly be dashed if they lose to Ohio State. I mean, nobody with two losses is getting into that college football playoff. So I think they're hoping for a big response this weekend and kind of banking on Minnesota and Iowa to lose some games so they could still go to Indianapolis with another opportunity potentially against Ohio State later on down the line.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And whether it's Ohio State or maybe even better would be to beat Ohio State now and then have it be an undefeated Penn State team that's in the top five come calling, and maybe that's what it takes to get them back into the mix. We'll see. Brian D. in Wisconsin. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great week.
You too. Thanks, guys.
It's that New Orleans.
Gus Kattengill, ESPN 100.3 in New Orleans, Louisiana's next. Gus, how are you, sir?
You know, it's raining outside. It's raining. We just got a Zion update. I think I'm doing my man.
Well, 5-0 under Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, I get it. You're excited. You want to unwrap the new toy of Zion Williamson with the NBA season getting going tomorrow night. But come on, man. Life's not that rough. LSU, maybe the best team in college football. Let's start with Zion, though. 6 to 8 weeks. And, it, you know, residual effects after that? No? Should be good to go?
Look, I did that just because, obviously, I think that's the first thing anyone outside of here is going to sort of feel. And, look, I found out, you know, I was told it happened in practice, just bump knees, and that's what happens. And the reason I bring that up to you and tell you is because it's just been laughable. And I don't understand why the team hasn't been more open about it or even described what happened, because I'm getting more people saying he needs to lose weight. This is his concern. He's too fat. He can't jump. I'm like, Mike, he turned Brandon Ingram, and his 130 pounds could have happened to him. It's just bad luck. I don't know what else to really honestly say, but I said going into the preseason finale against New York, I think, honestly, as crazy as this sounds to you, this franchise, this team, is better to handle an injury to a player like that than they were under Anthony Davis. They simply didn't have a lot of talent, I think, when AD was here. He couldn't sit down and get a cup of water, dude, and they would lose the lead or they would start to get blown out. And I don't see that with this team here. I think you have enough people that, you know, Zion's not your three-point shooter. He's not your jump shooter. He's not your slasher. Most of the stuff that he did in the preseason, which was a very good preseason, was in the paint. So you still have a lot of your team still to go. I still think the first 10, 11 games are going to be difficult with him. They're chock full of playoff teams and such. So, look, you get them towards mid to the end of December. For the most part, as you mentioned, football season will be over with there. You're still going to get it. But it is a gut punch. I think there was a lot of excitement to it. But
sure,
I still think this team's going to compete with them.
All right, real quick, just 10 seconds on this one for a nerd fantasy player. Lonzo Ball going to be the point guard, or is the impressive numbers I'm seeing for Nikhil Alexander-Walker, the rookie out of Virginia Tech, is he maybe going to steal that job away from him?
He's going to get minutes. I don't know whose minutes he's getting or how you're going to do it, but I tell you what, I could see him being at the end of the games to close out. He's smart. He knows what to do with the basketball, can shoot, can score, can pass. I love him.
Yeah, he's been impressive. I can say that. All right, let's talk some of the football. Let's go to LSU. Auburn getting a big number. I mean, Auburn's been really good. Their defense has been really good. The quarterback has been impressive at times. Tell me, 12.5? I mean, does that sound right to you?
You know, here's the thing. It's the offense. I think that numbers like that is because of the offense. Bo Nix, if you look at the stats, even against Arkansas, Gus Malzahn just wants them to manage the game, essentially. They rushed for over 200 yards. And look, if you look at LSU's defensive struggles this year, they've had trouble stopping the run. So I think that's going to be their key. Plus, they're going to try to run to try to keep LSU's offense off of the field. So I can understand it. Look, I thought Florida, that was high, but you saw it, right? It was tied. Then they get a touchdown, they're up, and then they get a stop or interception, and they score another touchdown, there's your 14. So I think that's why that number's like that, is because this game could be close and then boom, boom, two big quick pops, and they can do that. That's the ability of this offense, and I think that's the big difference as to why you see that number there.
Is LSU better than Alabama? You don't need to go into great detail, but right now, where is the confidence level?
Yeah.
Are they better?
They're as best suited to give them a competitive game as they have been in a long time, if that makes sense to you. Simply because I think of Joe Burrow, and he craves moments like that. He craves big games. He's going to make good decisions more often than not. And I think more importantly, they have the offensive weaponry to do that. Defensively, it scares the heck out of me because they had trouble stopping Sandy and Florida's passing attack. If Tua's remotely healthy with those receivers they have, dude, it could be a tennis match.
Wins over Texas and Florida already. They've probably got one mulligan, and they'll still make the playoffs,
yep.
Whether that's Auburn at home, at Alabama, Arkansas, A&M. They better not lose to A&M. I don't think A&M is very good. So they really just probably need to take one of the next two, Auburn here or after the bye week against Alabama, and they'll find themselves in the playoffs. All right, did anybody in their wildest dreams think that the Saints would go 5-0 under Teddy Bridgewater?
Not a shot. If they did, they'd been drinking. And I mean, look, that could be very possible here in New Orleans, but I can promise you. You know, that Monday after Breeze got hurt, right? I mean, again, you want to talk about a stomach punch. You're sitting there going, look, just go 3-3, man. Just get to 500 because, you know, talk of the first or second seed, it went out the window. It was get in the postseason, win your division, then you're good enough to maybe win those playoff games and get back to where you think you can be. But, look, this was a team that everyone thought was a Super Bowl contending team or a team that could at least get to a conference title game again. So there's talent on this team. They're deep on this team. And I think you're seeing the absolute best coaching job that Sean Payton's done since he's been here in 2006. It's been remarkable from the game planning to getting other people to go. And as crazy as it sounds, I think this team got deeper and better with Drew going out, because I think other people had to step up. I think other people got used, and leaders kind of rose to the occasion. I mean, you're seeing this team chock full of people ready to go. It's not just Drew's team anymore. It almost feels like a collective bunch, and that's something that kind of was there. But until you see it take shape and take ownership, I mean, it's there now.
Yeah, the confidence is growing, no doubt. All right, real quick, when do we see Drew Brees back?
Man, I think, honestly, it's the Falcons. Why would I put him in there? I mean, I have gotten arguments today with callers. They put him up there, get the rust. Mike Stoppy, the Hall of Fame quarterback. Practice him this week. Dress him Sunday. Have him go through the pregame workouts. Put the eye black on. You can throw all of those routes to everybody without getting hit. Plus, here's the other thing. He hasn't gone through a full week of practice. How is that thumb going to feel? Is it going to be sore? What if, it is tender? You don't know. Go through all of that this week, then he has a bye week, and then he can come spank the Falcons.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about it because you're playing good football with Adams, so why rush him?
Bingo.
It's one of the things we've talked about here with Mahomes, you know. All right, Gus Kattengill in New Orleans, always great stuff, buddy. Appreciate it. Have a great week.
For sure, man. Always a pleasure. All the way
from San Francisco. This is Roxy Bernstein, 95.7 The Game, A's Radio, ESPN Television. He's everywhere. Roxy, how are you, my friend?
What's up, Saran?
49ers, 6-0. What is this, first time since 2005 that a defense has held its opposition to, what is it, under 200 yards for three consecutive games? Man, I know you had confidence in the defense. Did anybody think it'd be this good?
I don't think so. But then again, keep in mind, I mean, here's an interesting stat regarding the 49ers schedule, right? Yes, they're 6-0. But those six teams have a combined record of 11-28. The remaining eight opponents now for the 49ers have a combined record of 34-20. So you go from a 280 winning percentage to a 620 winning percentage. So the schedule gets more difficult. The Niners took care of business, but it's the front that really has been impressive. The pass rush, I think Bosa has been better than expected. They knew they were getting a special talent, but he's already showing you he's elite. And when you have Dee Ford on the other side and Eric Armstead, who is really flourishing in his system, DeForest Buckner, this group right now is very tough to go up against. And the other special thing for Robert Saleh and the Niners' defense is they don't have to blitz to get to the quarterback. A lot of teams have to send five, even six to get there. The Niners are getting there with four, and they're able to drop seven, which makes it that much more difficult to throw the ball against them.
Yeah, by the way, the stat is to allow 7 points or fewer and 200 yards or fewer in three consecutive games, first team to do it since the 05 Pats. That is really, really impressive. And, all right, you mentioned the schedule stiffening up here as we head down the stretch run, or head into the second half, I guess I should say. We're not really into the stretch run, but into the second half. How much better can Jimmy Garoppolo play? How much more do they need him to be better?
Well, he can play better. I think that's for sure. And they need him to be better. And they've gotten by with him making some mistakes. Look, the offense was inept against the Redskins. Now, the weather had a lot to do with it on Sunday. But they couldn't move the ball consistently. And the wide receiver core is really beat up right now. So it wouldn't shock me to see the 49ers try to make a move on the trade market to bring in a receiver to give them some help, because Marquise Goodwin got banged up. There's a lot of inexperience out there. They're going to need, I think, somebody to go along with George Kittle. And, no, it may not be a splash move, but they're going to have to bring somebody in that's going to be of help to Jimmy Garoppolo in the offense on the outside.
All right, second time we've seen Derek Carr throw the ball into the end zone for a touchback. He seemed to say all the right things after the game, but come on. I mean, how many times is this going to happen?
It's got to stop. And look, I get what he's trying to do, right? He's trying to make a play. He's trying to reach for it. But you got to be smart. And it changed the whole complexion of the game, because the Raiders are right in it with the Packers early. And the momentum clearly shifted over to Green Bay, and Aaron Rodgers had a vintage Aaron Rodgers day. And frankly, the Raiders just aren't good enough to win a game and overcome mistakes like that. And so now they got to move the page. And again, they're in the midst of this horrific schedule, where they're not going to be home still for another couple of weeks. And I'm sure it has to take its toll, considering where they've been and the trip to Indy. Then they've had to go to London and now Green Bay and another road game coming up before they finally return to the Coliseum. So it's a number of issues right now for the Raiders. But, Seren, frankly, they're just not good enough to overcome those mistakes, and you got to capitalize on opportunities when you got them.
Darren Waller had another monster game. A lot of people picking him up over the first five, six, 7 weeks of the season. When did they know they had a guy that was this talented? I know they've inked him to the contract extension, so they believe in it. It's not just a fluke right now. But when did they realize they had a guy this talented?
They really liked him when he was with Baltimore, and he's had some off-the-field issues and some substance issues, which was a concern. But when they got him in camp and they saw him in a Raider uniform and going through training camp, they knew he had the potential to be special and a different player. And even if you were watching Hard Knocks, that was one of the things that stood out. And John Gruden was really excited about what Waller could do and the way he can be a dynamic weapon at the tight end spot. So they knew early on, and they liked him even before they brought him in. And it just is enhanced their view of him. And look, if he can keep everything on the straight and narrow, and if he can do what he's been doing, he's got all pro potential. I mean, he's an exceptional talent.
All right, gone Kevin Durant, hurt Klay Thompson, in D'Angelo Russell. Warriors getting ready to start the season. What are your expectations for what this year can be for them?
Well, I think that if they can just kind of keep their head above water until Klay Thompson gets back, and they'll reassess in early February where he's at, and they're hoping after the All-Star break he could come back. But if he can return and have an impact, then they feel pretty good about their chances, not just to be a playoff team, but maybe even make another deep run, considering a lot of the pieces are still there with Steph, and Kevon Looney was important to bring him back. When you look at some of the other pickups they've made, like Willie Cauley-Stein, for example, that they really think he'll fit in nicely with this team, that it's just, can they weather the storm in his absence? And my question for the Warriors is, where is the offense going to come from in his absence, right? We know Steph's going to score, and D'Angelo Russell was brought in to put up points. But somebody else is going to have to be an option as the third guy, and we'll see who that is. But they have to find offense in some other areas until Klay does come back.
What are you doing? You headed over to Hawaii here tomorrow or something to get ready for a basketball game? You got a call for ESPN pretty soon?
I don't get to go to Hawaii until Christmas, unfortunately. I do have to go to Shanghai in a couple of weeks.
Oh, man.
No comment, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Life of Roxy. It's a tough one. Roxy Bernstein in the Bay Area. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
You too, pal.
I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston.
And Adam Wexler, NBC Channel 2 in Houston, Texas next. Adam, how are you, sir?
Doing great.
Bigger subject, is it the Texans lose or the World Series starts tomorrow? I know how Texas loves its football.
But I think you still know the answer to that question. The answer is same old Texans, and let's go win a World Series. This city is ready to win another World Series. The Texans go up to Kansas City and look very, very good. They had two wins in a row and looked fantastic offensively, and yet they go up there yesterday in Indianapolis against a very good team, still probably a very underrated Colts team, and just kind of shoot themselves in the foot all afternoon. Tons of penalties, few too many mistakes, and now they're not in first place.
Yeah, that's how it usually works. All right, 220 favorites. I'll come back to the Texans in a minute. 220 favorites are the Astros. That's a pretty solid favorite. Everyone's talking about the starting pitching, and nobody could hold up to the Nationals over on the National League side. But is the answer this is where the bullpen actually flexes its muscle and the Astros grind out the at-bats against the starters and it's the Astro bullpen that wins the day?
That's definitely an area where they have a big advantage, and I think they should be feeling pretty good about their bullpen because they actually had to use a bullpen today and probably will again when it gets to game four after Cole and Verlander and Greinke should be getting the starts in games 1, 2, and 3. Game four probably will be a bullpen day, probably a lot of the same guys you saw in game six. And just the way it worked out for A.J. Hinch in that clinching game, not only did he go to so many different guys, he kept going to them with two outs and two on, and the next guy would come in. So it was high leverage innings and appearances pretty much the entire afternoon, and they were brilliant. They didn't give up a run in any of those situations. And obviously, the two runs at the end against Osuna kind of hurt, but they were okay with that a few minutes later.
Yeah, no doubt. Greinke, look, it's tough being in the shadow of Cole and Verlander, as brilliant as they've been, but is there any frustration that he's not delivering better here in the postseason?
Probably because of how much money he makes and about how much, I guess, fanfare there was at the deadline when he came over. He was outstanding during the regular season, and, you know, he definitely solidified things. I think people could be looking at it like, well, what if they hadn't traded for Greinke? They'd have two starters because Wade Miley fell apart. He probably won't even be on the roster for the second straight postseason series. And like I said, they're already set up for a bullpen day potentially once. Now they might have to do it, would have had to do it twice were he not here. He actually pitched brilliantly in his last start. I think A.J. Hinch was just had a fresh set of arms, didn't want to see him get into trouble. He only gave up one run but didn't last very long in his last outing at Yankee Stadium. So I think coming off of that, he might have looked a little bit better. But, again, it was a very short outing. And I'm sure, as you guys know, the beginning of Zach Greinke's postseason career many, many years ago was phenomenal, spectacular. And they kind of hit a halfway point sometime around 2015, maybe somewhere around there. And he's been a bad postseason pitcher for the last 5, 6 appearances.
All right, listen, I don't think there's any shame losing on the road in the NFL against a good team. And I think the Colts, a lot of people try to act like they're bad. I think they're really good all the way around their quarterback. And then their quarterback is doing what I would like to call an Alex Smith impression, like just keep it moving and don't get out of the way. But when you've got a guy that's supposed to be one of the dynamic young quarterbacks, I know, and you mentioned it when we started about the disappointment, same old Texans. Is that what it is, or was this just – a tough road loss, which happens against good teams in the NFL?
Yeah, probably more of the latter. And it really isn't the same old Texans, even though I'm the one who put that out there. I just hear it so much, I guess it got stuck in my head.
Sure.
With Deshaun Watson, there's no such thing. They have a chance to win every game that they play, no matter what the circumstances are. And that means in the playoffs, that means on the road, that means at New England, that means anything. And even yesterday, they had the ball with, you know, a minute to go and driving for the tying touchdown. You had a ball go off the fingertips of Kiki QT, and then Darius Leonard makes a spectacular interception, which ends the game. But, you know, the couple not succeeding in the red zone, this team with this personnel, especially because of Watson, they should be an elite red zone team. And for the most part, they have. But yesterday, their first three trips were all field goals. And the Colts' first three trips to the red zone were all touchdowns. That's your ball game. You can't have that on the road against good teams. You have to capitalize with touchdowns. Yesterday, they just simply couldn't do it.
Colts favored to beat the Broncos next week means the Texans need to keep pace. They're a 6.5-point favorite as they host the Raiders, so we'll see what that brings. NBA getting ready to tip. What are the early returns on pairing Westbrook with Harden? Is it going better than Paul with Harden?
Everything should be fine. It's going to take a while. There are going to be some growing pains, but I'm sure the national narrative will be these guys don't fit together. Look, they just had 13 combined turnovers, but nobody will mention that Harden had 40, Westbrook had a triple-double, and the Rockets still won the game. We're already preparing for that angle of it, but it's going to take Westbrook a little while to figure out when he's supposed to attack and how much is he supposed to command the basketball. James Harden will have zero issue with any of this stuff. If he's off the ball, he'll just become one of the better shooters off the ball. If he's with the ball, he'll look exactly like he did a year ago. He's still going to put up unbelievable numbers. It's just a matter of at what point in the season have they figured it out with Westbrook. How can he limit his turnovers, and how can he not shoot 15 three-pointers a game, which everybody else on the team would have a green light for, but he really shouldn't.
Adam Wexler in Houston. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate the time. Have yourself a great week.
Thanks.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Before Carter Stanley, who was the last Kansas quarterback to have four touchdowns and no interceptions in a road game?
Was it the JC kid who played for Mark Mangino, McDonald? What was his name?
Bill Whittemore?
Exactly. I nailed it.
It was Bill Whittemore. September 13th,
what number did Whittemore wear?
Number four,
I think, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Back when they had the navy blue.
Nailed that.
And red jerseys. Yeah, September 13th, 2003, at Wyoming. There have been five since then, but four of those were Todd Reesing in home games. And the other one, I don't remember this guy, Jason Swanson?
When did that happen?
December 23rd, 2005, against Houston. Neutral site game. That clearly was a bowl game. Fort Worth Bowl. Jason Swanson. 319 for 29, 307, 4-0.
Who is that?
No idea.
Is that the guy you made up?
Nope. You know who the opposite number was in that game?
Against Houston? Case Keenum?
Mm-mm. His name has been said today by you when talking to Nate Taylor about backup quarterbacks and Andy Reid.
Kevin Cobb.
Kevin Cobb, who threw no touchdowns.
I believe it's pronounced Kolb.
42-13 Hawks.
Really?
In the Fort Worth Bowl.
Well, there's a reason not to draft Kevin Cobb right there.
I was in school during that, and I have no recollection of Jason Swanson, you say?
Yeah. John Cornish, 16 for 101. Clark Green.
Remember John Cornish.
Brandon McAnderson.
Swanson, shockingly, has no memory of you either.
Yeah,
maybe we hung out at the same parties.
Jed Marshall? Don't recall.
Don't remember him. Never heard of him. Playing for some Joe's Kansas City Barbecue on that. If you're going out tailgating, don't forget the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, whether it's a fall Friday night, maybe it's a Saturday out at the old alma mater, or maybe it's just getting together for a watch party. Make sure you order ahead and pick up Joe's Kansas City Barbecue to make your football festivities absolutely perfect. Award-winning, world-famous smoked meats, delicious sides, carry-out and catering available at all three Joe's locations. Just visit the website, joeskc.com, to find the location nearest you. It's Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, world-famous.
Mm-hmm.
World-famous. And I've now got one of my daughters like, when are we going back to Joe's? When are we going back to Joe's? Although she calls it, Kansas City Joe's.
Yeah, because it used to be Oklahoma.
Yeah. Well, we know what she's talking about.
Oh, yeah. So somebody tweeted out a picture. Somebody went and got the burn-in Z-Man. And I was like,
That's a strong play.
I must try.
Yeah, that's a strong play. Rocket Pig's my favorite.
Yeah, that's been my deal lately.
You have many deals.
I do have many deals, but the Z-Man is so good, but the Rocket Pig has been better for me. I just keep going back to it.
I love the Rocket Pig.
Got the gumbo last time at Jed's insistence, and it was fabulous.
You know, my buddy Archie is the champion of their chili.
Yes.
Joe's Chili. So it's chilly weather tonight.
Yep.
So go grab you some at Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Like I said, you can order ahead, joeskc.com. Don't got to be just a tailgate. You can order ahead for a little dinner tonight. All right. Our thanks to all the guys on the two-minute drill, by the way. Saints are a pretty good team. 5-0. With Teddy Bridgewater,
mm-hmm.
I think Bridgewater I thought was a solid quarterback, but I didn't think he was going to play at this level, but it speaks to the talent around him.
Sure.
He is a free agent after this year, by the way.
Didn't have his best player around him yesterday.
Alvin Kamara. I mean, that's still got it done.
That's big.
That's really big.
They've been a real good defensive team the last four. How about this? 414, 380, and 514 their first 3 weeks. Last 4 weeks, the Saints defense has given up 257, 252, 226, 252. They're locking it down.
The Chiefs gave up less than that last week.
Mm-hmm.
So they're better than, right?
Four straight weeks.
How concerned, how terrified are you of Aaron Rodgers rolling into Arrowhead Stadium next Sunday? Fear factor what?
7.5. It's not 9. But because I think they'll be still at 100%.
Because you're an adult and have a memory and recognize that he's not going to come in and burn the city down. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Okay.
7.5, though. I mean, they're going to have to get some turnover somehow. The issue I have is that they need to turn the Packers over to win this game. I don't know that they're going to.
They've done but fairly well against the Packers when the Packers are coming in here and supposed to be unbeatable.
13-0. Who 2011. I was just watching the game on NFL Game Pass over the weekend, and I just wanted to kind of see what things look like, what that team looked like. The Chiefs were not that was not a good team. They'd just gone. Romeo Crennel had just been announced as the interim. They just fired Todd Haley, so maybe there was a little bit of the backup quarterback thing where you sack it up for the defensive coordinator who's been vaulted back into that spot, and it was a one-sided game when the 13-0 Packers came in, and so I guess there could be some of that. That element won't exist, but the element of the backup quarterback could certainly exist. I think we saw a little bit of that in Denver, and this will be his first start, whoever it is. But I could see that prime time Arrowhead. We're gonna do it for Patrick. I could still see some of that emotion coming into this game. Rodgers is gonna come in here and do what? Pfft, not in our house. I could see a little bit of that.
If the Chiefs are not going to start Matt Moore and Patrick Mahomes is not going to be ready, who are they going to start?
The only answer is they'd have to go get someone, or they're not going to start Kyle Shermer.
They're not?
I don't think so.
How could somebody not currently practicing with the team be more prepared than a guy who's at least been in the room and in all the offensive meetings?
They're going to start Matt Moore.
Okay, I agree. Who's going to back him up?
Probably Kyle Shermer.
So they've got to activate him.
Yeah, which means they got to move someone.
So think about it right now. This is how much the Chiefs think of him, and frankly, this is how much the rest of the league thinks of him. If you wanted to hose the Chiefs, sign Kyle Shermer off the practice squad.
whoever backs him up is going to require a move of some sort, whether it's Shermer or they sign somebody off the waiver wire.
What about the left side of the Chiefs' offensive line makes you think that you should be like, oh, no worries, Matt Moore won't get hurt?
Nothing. Not a single thing.
So that means you want whoever's going to be the backup in practicing on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So that a move should be coming by Wednesday. Either Kyle Shermer gets activated. I mean, I guess you can leave him on the practice squad, but he can't be the backup unless he's activated, which means you got to cut somebody. And you're going to have to cut somebody down the road anyway.
Right.
Because Chad Henne is going to be ready in a week or two, unless you're going to cut Chad Henne.
Yeah. And I don't know why you'd do that.
I mean, one of the things you're doing is you figure an injury is going to occur somewhere and you can just IR someone who's legitimately hurt, generally speaking. Probably, what, about every other week, every third week,
mm-hmm.
you're putting somebody on the IR in the NFL? So it usually will take care of itself. Now, you may leave you thin in a numbers game and may not be one of the positions you have the depth to allow an IR, but they are going to have to make a roster move. I don't think they're going to go into the game with only one healthy quarterback, are they?
No. Especially when that quarterback's 35 years old.
I mean, or would you roll the dice and give it a go?
And let...
Just Matt Moore by himself.
Yeah, but let's say he gets hurt. There's some position.
Heard
player
Anthony
that,
Sherman's
yeah,
so Sherman name is the guy that
just run wildcat the rest of the evening.
That's probably what you do.
Yeah. I mean, if it isn't like the task isn't tall enough as it is, but if Matt Moore starts and gets hurt, you're probably losing that game anyway. So you know. Yeah. Throw caution to the wind and, hey, mix it up and throw a little wildcat. I mean, you're probably hosed completely if you have to go to Kyle Shermer. Is it that much worse at this point to have someone come in and run the wildcat? Tyreek Hill could be play quarterback. Just take the ball and he can't throw it, I guess. But somebody have to be able to throw the ball, I guess, to be that guy. So, but you could find a way to fart around with it, I guess.
Kelce?
Yeah.
High school quarterback. They always love to talk about that.
Yeah.
Move's coming. I think they'll activate Shermer. Shermer will be the backup. That means then whenever Henne comes back, you've got to cut Shermer. And by the way, to activate Shermer, you've got to cut somebody else. So look around that roster and figure out where you think you've got some. In fact, my guess is that you're going to see an offensive lineman.
Wisniewski?
Probably. I mean, since he hadn't played, I think he'd be the guy. And then Shermer's there, ready to go.
Yeah.
And then
Greg Sinnott hasn't played. He's another guy who's on the 53 but has seen.
And
no
the
time.
Illinois kid.
Yeah. Allegretti, who actually was active last week for the first time, but probably don't cut a fresh draft pick. Other two guys you don't really.
You should cut the worst guy.
Yeah. Yeah, ideally. But I mean, I would see if it's between those three guys, I would doubt that the guy they actually drafted is going to go bye bye. When not given, not you know, being in a position to prove his worth yet, it's probably one of the guys you've signed along the way.
Here's one of the things I was thinking about watching both the Eagles and Bears struggle. How much shine is off the Andy Reid coaching tree with Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy having their frustrations?
Mm-hmm. I mean. Nagy had to
not a lot
answer the question. Did you think of benching your quarterback yesterday? And he said he didn't. But I mean, that's things have not gone well. He has not been.
What was the comment that Matt Nagy made when he was talking about Trubisky? Did he say something to the effect of Trubisky was number one on my board? Something like that, right? When he got the job and they're mm-hmm. asking about, well, you had to have been in the discussion when the Chiefs took Mahomes and Trubisky was out there. And I thought he said something to the effect of, well, Trubisky was number one on my board.
Mm.
Something like
that. I
remember
that. I trust your memory.
The reason you don't make any statements like that is because now when he sucks, you're now tagged with, well, you thought he was the best one.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I mean, just think about how bad that quarterback position's gotten in Chicago.
Yes.
I mean, he is out there. All right, 913-310-810. Let's talk to Chris. You're in the program. Chris, what's going on?
Hey, Saran, how are you today?
Good, buddy. What's on your mind?
Okay, you can call me an idiot if you'd like when I say this.
I'll try not to.
Fourth-round pick, the Indianapolis Colts, to borrow Andrew Luck for 4 weeks.
He retired.
I know, but we could drag him out.
He'd still be their property, wouldn't
do
he?
Do you...
Call me an idiot.
Well, I mean... I get your logic, but if he doesn't want to play for the team he's always played for, what makes you think he wants to come play for the Chiefs?
Oh, I already pictured him coming back to Indianapolis for the end of the season for some reason. But you know, I could be wrong on that, too.
I don't think he's coming back. But, listen, if he is, Chris, I don't know. Hell, kick the tires, I guess. I mean, idiot, I'm no. Wishful thinking, yes.
Yeah,
going to happen,
yeah.
No.
No.
Yeah. That's what, I appreciate it, Chris. I think, you know, listen, does practice matter? Does the meeting room matter? Then it has to be Kyle Shermer, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If it doesn't, you're just going to go grab a guy off the streets.
then the next time you talk about he didn't get any reps in practice.
That's gone.
We're going to go, yes, but this guy wasn't even in town, and he came in and fired things up.
I'll say this, if Andy Reid can win with a guy he didn't even start training camp with, a guy that nobody started training camp with and beat the 6-1 Packers, that'll be something, won't it?
Absolutely.
Okay. 913-310-810. You're in the program.
New time, same team. The program with Saren Petro. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Preseason college basketball poll is out, the AP poll. Michigan State, number one. Kentucky, number two. Duke is four. Louisville's five.
Yep.
Those are facts.
Those are facts.
That,
Michigan
of course,
State, number one for the first time ever in the AP preseason poll. That's kind of surprising.
Getting three first-place votes instead of getting number three are the Kansas Jayhawks. Michigan, 60 first-place votes. Kentucky, two. Kansas, three. Michigan State, Kentucky, Kansas, Duke, Louisville. It is the first time that neither one of the championship game participants, Virginia and Texas Tech.
Third time.
I was going to say since.
Oh, sorry.
If I could finish the sentence.
Sorry.
Why don't you take it from here?
I swallowed the olive.
Third time.
As you always say.
Go ahead. What would you say?
It's the third time in the preseason poll history that the two teams that were in the championship game were not in the top 10 the following year.
That's right. Virginia's at 11. Texas Tech is at 13. Last time that it happened?
2008-09, Kansas and Memphis.
Memphis, not making it the
next year. Other time, Maryland, Indiana in 2002-03.
SEC and Big 12 schools for you to chew on. Texas Tech, as I said, at 13. Baylor at 16. LSU 22, Auburn 24. Others receiving votes from those two leagues, Tennessee, Missouri.
What?
Yeah, that happened. Mississippi State. And it looks like that is it. Oh, and Alabama got a couple of votes.
Syracuse got three.
Yeah, well, but I'm not sure why. Chad, you're in the program. What's going on, Chad?
Hey, guys. So I've been off the grid in the middle of the Ozarks, rendezvousing the Ozarks at a 4x4 rally. So you may have already talked about this, but I'm just curious. How does Patrick Mahomes get hurt on a quarterback sneak? It's like the only time I ever remember him doing a quarterback sneak, and somebody like Tom Brady seems like three or four a game and doesn't get hurt. Is there like a technique with the offensive lineman or with the quarterback that protects Brady? I mean, what happened on that play? How did Mahomes? Was it just a fluke? I mean, how did that happen?
He got unlucky.
It is a fluke. I mean, I can't come up with anything beyond that. My best guess would be Tom Brady's. I mean, if you wanted to get some physics into it, he's 3 inches taller. Does that factor in that he's got the knee was a little bit further? I don't know. LDT seemed to fire out and kind of miss and end up on the ground. Was that part of it that somebody was able to land there? I think at the end of the day, it's a fluke injury. I mean, it happens. The NFL is a physical game. I don't have any you know, you mentioned you'd been out of town. There's a lot of people that were very upset that they were running the quarterback sneak. It's either in your playbook or it's not. I'll talk about it with Trent Green. We'll get his thoughts about it. He obviously, having been an NFL quarterback, we'll see what he has to say about to sneak it or not. To me, I like the quarterback sneak. It's the easiest way to me to get a yard. I like the play call. It did what it was supposed to do. Just a fluke injury happened, and that's too bad. But it's reality of the NFL. You're going to get hurt. We will take a break, come back. Trent Green is next here in the program.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, Cordarrelle Patterson now has 7 career kickoff return touchdowns. Only 2 players have more. Name either one. Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.